you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Ah, welcome to It Could Happen Here, a podcast about things falling apart and how to deal with that and hopefully take care of yourself and your people. Today, we have a returning guest, Carl Casarda from InRange TV. Now, Carl, every time you and I have chatted on a show together, it has been about firearms, which is obviously your passion and specialty, well, one of your specialties. But today we're not talking at all about guns. I mean, maybe here and there. But today we're talking about the thing that has been your career for, what, most of your working life, fair to say?
Yep, that's true. Yep.
You want to kind of walk through your background here? Because we're going to be talking about information security and, like, sort of the future of threats that are going to be, like, coming throughout, like, the next few years of our lives. Obviously, this year in particular, there's been a bunch of stories about, like, Russian attacks on digital infrastructure and vice versa. And that's always, like, pretty much has been something that's in everybody's back burner since we got the internet, usually through, like, questionable films with Sandra Bullock. I think that was net, right?
The net.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Where they somehow hacked a car in 1998 or something. Very
well, you got to do that when you're flying through cyberspace with your VR helmet on and your gloves, right? Yeah.
So. But yeah, you want to walk everyone through kind of what your actual background is in this industry first?
Yeah, totally. So if anyone watches InRange, watched it for a long time, you'll see this reflected in some of my content, because I do deal with some of this intermittently on the channel, and it's definitely influenced how I approach my work there with the social media and all that. But so way back when, I was like one of those kids that was in the hacker space, and I grew up like trying to make computers and technology do what it wasn't designed to do and learn to make it do things it shouldn't have done for my own interests or others around me. Not in any really negative way, but like just a deep curiosity and how does this stuff work? And being part of the early online community, we're talking pre-internet, where you'd have like an acoustic coupling jack modem and you would dial in like war games.
Yeah.
And like literally plug your headset into the
thing.
I was on boards like that way back when.
We never should have gone past those days. Doing things wirelessly was such a mistake. Like, I'm so pissed off that when I like sit down to research, I'm not like jacking into a gigantic box. like that makes me livid. Like, Shadowrun promised me that I was going to be like using one hand to shoot at the approaching corporate security guards and have another hand on my like keyboard that I wear around my neck that I like plug into the wall to hack buildings. But
well, hey, maybe someday we'll have neurological implants or wet wire implants brought to us by Monsanto that'll eventually get DRM'd and we'll just get shut off in our own rooms, right?
From your mouth to God's ears, Carl.
Absolutely. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want my neural tissue tied directly to a corporation?
Oh, but fuck yes.
But anyway, so I grew up in that space, and it actually, back then, it naturally turned into a career. It wasn't like now. Nowadays, you pretty much have to go get a bunch of certificates and a college degree to even start looking in an InfoSec career. But back then, if you kind of had like skills with a Z at the end, to be kind of cringy, you could get a job. And I landed up doing like help desk at this one company. I landed up, they noticed that that's where my interests were. And I landed up becoming their information security architect over a couple of years. And that turned into a multiple decade career, pretty much culminating in working at a tier one internet backbone provider, doing subsea fiber optic like routing, networking and DDoS mitigation and botnet control, search and destroy. So it really turned into a really wide career, not only like what I started off, backbone internet, but like encryption, firewalls, application layer controls across the board for multiple corporations. So it was a weird and interesting space, but I don't really do that much anymore except on the side, but I've had a pretty exciting career with it.
So I think probably a good place to start is just in general, because folks are always interested about this. What is your recommendation for people who ask, like, what should I be doing to kind of protect myself as I force my head under the constant stream of sewer water that is social media these days?
Well, yeah, you know, the simplest thing, and everything in InfoSec is always controversial, just like anything
right,
in life.
Right.
Any recommendation you make, someone's going to be like, but otherwise or anyways, or there's a better solution. And there always is a better solution. But the realistic thing is, when you talk to the average person isn't going to sit there and hack a Linux box to have a better social media experience. That's just not realistic. So the best thing anyone can do, the simplest best thing, is to get one of the trusted password managers. There's a number of them out there. I'm not going to recommend an individual one right now, because anyone I recommend, someone's going to go, but there's another one. But there's a few of them out there. Having a password manager and having a unique, difficult, complex password for every account you log in onto on the internet is the first number one thing you can do as an individual to protect your interests. Because if you're logging in with the same password monkey to Facebook, Twitter, and your bank account, that is a disaster waiting to happen. So the first thing you can do, password manager, passwords you yourself can't remember as a result. I allow the password manager to generate like 24 character long alphanumeric crypto nonsense. You put a gun in my mouth and say, what's your password to your bank? And I don't know. I can't give it to you. I have no idea. And so that right there is the first thing any basic individual can do to protect themselves on the internet.
That is totally sensible. I'm not great at password managers, but I never know what my passwords are, and they're all different. And so my life is this constant stream of like needing to figure out what my password was, and failing and resetting it. But it does mean that I change passwords regularly.
Right. But what's so great about password managers is you can have passwords that you could never human remember, and you can have unique ones per website. Every website you log into could be unique. And by having it in this database that's properly encrypted with a key phrase or even dual factor, then at that point means you literally just can cut and paste your passwords into things. You don't yourself know what they are. And if depending on your privacy levels, you can do that locally with local solutions with files like on your own machine. But frankly, a couple of the cloud-based solutions, as much as the cloud freaks people out, is the better one, because it'll work on your phone. It'll work on your laptop. It'll work on everything everywhere.
That makes total sense. I think another good thing to get into while we're on this subject, we just started talking about passwords, and obviously it is important to keep and secure those. I think one thing folks don't often think about, especially people who are activists, who may foresee or have engaged in things that are legally questionable, don't think about enough is social media networking. And by which I mean having social media that like it is possible to find your other social media by like knowing, you know, like having the same name in Twitter and on Instagram and stuff. Having social media that like can be tracked across accounts. Most people would be surprised at how easy it is to do that. Bellingcat, a huge amount of tracking Nazis, tracking even like a ton of the work I did not do, but my colleagues did, to like Doc's Russian like secret service agents and stuff, was like, oh, we found them in, you know, somebody, their boss's wedding, like they're tagged in this thing in VK. And from that, we were able to like find their account on this other site. And like from that, like now we have this like map of everywhere they've been for the last like 3 weeks. And we can like build this social map of their entire life.
Yeah, no, by just literally existing in modern space, mm-hmm. you're constantly leaking some form of metadata, right? You are always leaking metadata. And the more of it you allow to exist in the world, the more that's the case. So like, there's also, you got to think about what the threat is and what the risk is, right? There's the risk of the individual having a parasocial relationship with the internet, like I do as a content creator, is one thing. There's always someone that wants to delve into your private life, but that's a right. very different risk than a nation state actor, right? Those are two different yes. things. And when it comes to a nation state actor, quite honestly, unless you're real good and have been doing it for a long time, the individual bluntly is kind of fucked, to use the right word.
As a general rule, your best security as an individual in that situation is the anonymity of the crowd. But we're also not talking about most people who are threatened kind of by the state in that situation are not being threatened by the federal government, but they may be attending protests and not want the Louisville police to like put together that they're in an affinity group with people. And like something you can do for that is make sure you're not, like if you have a personal account that's under your name with your friends, that account shouldn't be liking and sharing things from like a political account that you have or from the account of like a group that you're a part of or something like that. Like just try to think about and look at your digital footprint from the outside and think, is it possible to connect me to people I don't want to be publicly connected to through this?
And the minute you've breached that connection once, it's gone forever, right?
Forever. Yes.
This is the same thing as like with phones, like someone will have like their regular phone, which by the way, all mm-hmm. these smartphones are just surveillance devices in our pocket, right?
Yes.
But let's say you go get a burner so that you mm-hmm. don't want to be connected to the device that you normally use on a level that's one step above the regular individual level. If you ever have those two devices emanating at the same time, they're now connected in a way that, like, let's say the authorities can associate them together because of triangulation yes. and seeing a burner phone and your phone coming from the same house. You've breached all the privacy you would have had from your burner phone, for example.
Now, Carl, do you have much to say on the subject of, because I know one thing I have seen people do, people who are, you know, having conversations that they're concerned about, is put bags in Faraday cages. And I've heard mixed things about how reliable Faraday bags and stuff are for actually stopping signals. Do you have much to say on that matter?
My experience with that is not all bags that you can just buy off the internet are made equally. Right. So what you want to do is test it. And you can only test it to a certain degree. But the really simple tests are, you put it in the bag and you try to dial the darn thing or use any Wi-Fi connections to it. And that's a simple test. Now, is it as good as not having the thing on you? Of course not. Leaving it somewhere else is always the best answer. But in my opinion, a properly built Faraday box or cage or bag that you've put some testing into is a pretty reliable solution.
And it's, you know, there are, so a problem that you might encounter is, or that I have, so one thing I have heard people talk about is like, well, in order to have kind of a private conversation, we like drove to a specific location and we left our phones off in the car and then went on a walk. And the problem with that is that now you have both just driven to a location with those phones and those phones are associated with each other, right?
Right. Well, so first of all, you got to think of a world where all of this metadata is being collected at all times. So these phones right. and their associations in physical proximity to one another is stored somewhere at all times, whether or not it's going to be resourced or accessible to the powers that be when they yes. want it to be, it's all there. My phone next to your phone, next to that guy's phone, those associations all exist. They're all talking to the same cell phone towers in the same area, giving them not only GPS coordinates, but triangulation data, which by the way, if you go way back to the hacker, Kevin Mitnick, that stuff was going on back then before they had GPS,
oh, yes.
they're using triangulation data to get him, right? So that stuff's all still happening and those associations occur. In regards to saying, I turned my phone off, how do you know that's off? Most of these right. modern phones, what does off mean? And yeah, okay, pull the battery. Maybe. But even then, I would not trust any of these devices in the regards to them, quote, being off. Especially things like phones that have yeah. unremovable or not removable batteries. Off is more like sleep than it is right. off. Yeah.
I think one of the worst things that's happened for personal security is the end of the phone where you can remove the battery. Like... being
yeah.
unable to actually cut power to it without, you know, disassembling it is a real issue.
One could argue that there was like that's a much more insidious reason they did that, or one could also yeah. argue that it was just one of design and comfort. Yeah. And it's like hard to say. It doesn't really matter if it was Insidious or not. That's a reality.
Kind of a porque no los dos situation, right?
Yeah, totally. So well, now that we're talking about phones, here's another thing that's been near and dear. And I think you've seen some posts from me about this. Everybody really likes the convenience of things like biometrics, thumb authentication, fingerprint ID, facial identification. And here's the reality of that. We know this already, and there's legal, this exists in legal space already. But the reality is that you can be coerced to provide biometric data against your will. So if your phone is authenticated to you with a fingerprint ID or your facial ID, they can pretty much say, you must give us your thumb to unlock this phone. Or for that matter, frankly, they could hold the phone in front of your face in certain circumstances, even against your will, and it will unlock the device. And that is considered not a violation of your rights. So for example, if you had a long, strong password on the phone, they cannot coerce you to give that up because that would be a violation of your own rights and Fifth Amendment, which is interesting. But at the same time, one could also argue that in certain circumstances where there's a lot of cameras that are not necessarily watching everything you do, that you could also consider that passphrases could be dangerous, like say in an airport, because all those cameras could see you plugging in your passcode. So it's a matter of if, when, and where, right? So what's the right solution at the best time? But I would say that if you were going to be in a place that was contentious, it is almost always better to make sure you do not allow for any biometric authentication on the device.
Yes, I never never turn on, don't even ever have had it in the, ideally, you have never turned on facial recognition on your phone, even if you deactivated. That was one of the first, I used to be in tech journalism, right? Obviously, I'm not an expert on any of this, but the worst thing in terms of my personal comfort with devices was when they were everything's going to read faces and fingerprints now. I don't love that. But it's inevitable, right? Because it is, and I had in the past, I did a fingerprint unlock earlier in my life, and I do not have any devices that unlock that way anymore. But you do, it is more convenient, right? You miss it when you need to get to your phone quickly and you can't do it. But I don't even let my phone have just a four phrase password anymore. It's eight characters for me. It's a little bit of a pain in the ass, but it comes with fewer risks.
And one of the things that's challenging to every individual is they have to look at what their threat profile is, right? So for example, soccer mom driving her kids to school and stuff, she might be really good, well off with a biometric authentication on her phone, frankly.
Yeah.
Because if she didn't use that, maybe she wouldn't even use a proper four character passphrase. And if she's not concerned about being at a protest, for example, and having some authoritarian take her phone away from her and authenticate to it, maybe she doesn't need to worry about that. But for a lot of us and the worlds we live in, that's a different risk profile, right? We got to think about what our risks are as individuals and what makes sense. So if your passphrase is going to be 1234 or use a thumbprint ID, for most people, they'd be better with the thumbprint ID. But for someone like myself, no, it's not a good idea.
Yeah. And that's, I think that kind of brings us to probably the last part of this, which is, do you have specific advice on VPNs? Obviously, I recommend everybody use Signal. I just for messages in general, but especially stuff that is secure. Don't, if you number one, first rule of any kind of this sort of security, don't ever put anything on your phone ever that's legally questionable if you can avoid it, conversationally, right? Don't send it over a phone if it's something you would not be able to survive having read to you in a courtroom.
Yeah. So for the audience, a lot of the audience may not know what Signal even is, right? So Signal is a text messaging alternative. So for example, on your phone, you've got regular text, or if you've got an iPhone, you've got iMessage. Signal is an end-to-end encrypted solution that you install as an app. And because it's end-to-end encryption, it means that it passes the wire, in theory, not decryptable by the parties that are passing the data packets in the middle. So that's a man-in-middle decryption, right? So for example, iMessage is encrypted theoretically end-to-end, but Apple ultimately has the cryptographic keys. So there is, while they might say one thing, there is nothing really preventing them from being man in the middle and being able to read the message in transit from A to B. But if the keys are stored on your device, which are then protected with your passphrase or whatever your authentication mechanism is, and those keys are not archived or kept by some hierarchical man in the middle authority, if it's done right, which Signal is done pretty well, it means that your data in transit is probably not decryptable. And that's why Signal is a good solution. And it's a good one for the average person. Install the app, It works just like text messaging, but you can have a pretty good level of knowledge that the data you're passing is not being decrypted or caught in transmission or in the path.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
So I would say get Signal. It's your best bet, right? Like, and again, I said, you know, you don't want to ever say anything over a phone that is something that could get you in trouble. But also, like, life is life, and that's not always realistic for people in certain situations. So again, Signal is your best bet. Nothing is perfect. And again, if you're putting it on your phone, there's a number of things that could go wrong every single time you do that. But that's one of your better things that you could do. And then, of course, we talk about VPNs.
Yeah, so VPN to those, like, I'm just going to go with the basic levels because I don't necessarily know the level of knowledge that people are listening. VPN is a virtual private network. So yes. What that is you connect to this virtual private network and it passes your data through an encrypted tunnel to an exit point somewhere else on the internet, in theory, masking the source and origin of your request. So like, for example, let's say you were looking up something on the internet that you didn't necessarily want people to know you're looking up.
Yeah, like let's say you're researching the truth about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy by Bernard Montgomery Sanders. And you know that the NSA is looking for truth seekers who are finding out the reality of that situation. You know, you don't necessarily want them to know that you have become pilled.
Right. So if you were to do this from your computer at home, what would happen is, to people that don't know how this all works, you would be coming from an IP address that's associated with your account that you're connecting to, whether it's Verizon or Comcast or whatever. And you go and search up that truth, and the NSA finds you with a keyword search for JFK and the truth. And therefore, because of that keyword search, they go to Comcast or to Verizon and say, hey, we are requesting you tell us who did this search. They will get them essentially a request that's a legal request for information. And then Comcast or Verizon will provide the NSA, this is the IP address and account of the person that did that. What VPN does is you connect to the VPN service first. The connection from your machine to the VPN service is then encrypted. Now, does the VPN service know your IP address? Yes. But when you actually type in that information or go to the internet to request that data, it actually goes through the VPN's private tunneling network and egresses from somewhere else on the internet, thus masking your actual IP address and, in theory, your origin of source. Now, that's not 100% true. But what that does is mean that if someone, if say the NSA, wanted to know who was doing this truth search, they would then find an IP address that actually came out of, let's say, Joe's VPN service. Mm-hmm. And they would have to go to Joe's VPN service and go, we noticed this emanated from your network. Who did this? At that point, you have to trust Joe's VPN service to not disclose their account information about you. Mm-hmm. So what you've done is you've changed it. We know the telecoms will communicate with the government or whoever if they need to. They always will.
Yes.
They have to. You don't necessarily know if Joe's VPN service will. You've changed your trust model from your telecom to your VPN service. So if you're going to pick a VPN, you have to do a little bit of research to know that it's a trustworthy resource that won't just give you up at the lightest form of interrogation.
Yeah. And none of them, again, there's nothing perfect. And often, like, we did find out, what was it last year, that one popular VPN was like run by the feds. Like, it's, yeah, that's not an impossible thing. I know a lot of folks, particularly journalists, use Proton, which is, I think, based in Switzerland. And you will get given up if the Swiss government is angry at you, right?
You brought up a very good point.
Yeah.
Services that exist outside of the CONUS, the continental U.S., mean that they are under different legal jurisdiction than ones that exist wholly within the CONUS.
Yes.
So as a result, if something from the United States government comes as a request to the Swiss company, there's a much higher chance that a Swiss company would be like, we don't really care about your request.
Yeah,
so that's worth considering. Yeah. Also, think about this. This actually works in reverse, and I don't want to get too deep into this, but when you're working at a tier one internet backbone provider, you should know that sometimes traffic strangely gets pushed offshore and then back to the United States for analysis that would normally be, let's say, not necessarily constitutionally legal in the United States.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of shenanigans going on.
Yeah. And again, I think Proton's generally a pretty good service. I've had no problems with it. But we should be clear here. None of these are perfect solutions. There is no perfect solution. The only perfect method of digital security is not putting things on the internet or like through, you know, mobile networks and stuff like that. Is if it stays between you and someone else, that is your best bet of it not being, you know, intercepted or something. A conversation that you have in the woods without phones anywhere near you is the most secure kind of conversation.
Let me second on Proton. I agree. It's a good service. There are others out there. We're not trying to pick on one in particular or pick against anyone in particular either.
There's a bunch that work. Yeah.
Another thing that you need to consider in this sort of thing is also what you're dealing with. Like, so for example, I put up a post a while back because there was a bunch of stuff going on in Ukraine with people posting photos that got their locations to schools.
Yeah.
And bad things happened.
People got, that has been happening for a decade in that war. Like, almost a decade, as long as it's been going on.
And I posted something about it, and one of the recommendations I made on there was a contentious one, but I'm going to back it up in a minute. I mentioned Tor, the Onion Relay. So the Tor is essentially it was originally created as a way to deal with the dark web, quote unquote, and to also relay traffic in a way to mask the origins, very much like a VPN service. Now, there are a bunch of these. So what it was is there's these Onion Relay nodes all over the internet, and when you connect to the Onion network, your traffic bounces through 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of these nodes. You can sort of dictate what you want depending on the client you have. And so let's say you connect to an Onion router network node in Arizona, and then you egress somewhere in France, and you've jumped through 6 nodes in the process. Well, one of the things that's a well-known fact is that a number of these Onion relay routing nodes are owned by nation-state actors, whether it's the United States or others.
Okay.
So one of the things I got taken to task for, and I want to explain this, is people are like, well, that's a compromised network. It doesn't mean that it's useful. Actually, it does, because depending on what you're trying to do may matter. If you're trying to mask the origin of your data source or your upload or your search for a short duration of time, this will still help. You jump through 6 nodes. They've got to relay back 6 nodes to figure out the origin of the person connecting to the relay network. And that's assuming that there was a compromised node in the process. So
yeah,
that means if you're passing data through a compromised node, does that mean the data in transit is safe? No, but is the anonymity of the origin of the poster safer for a longer duration of time? Yes. So these things get really complex real fast.
And this is, again, one of the best things you can do, because there's no single perfect solution, but stacking. So not just going through Tor, but also Tor and a VPN at the same time. And I think one of the better ways to think about security is kind of the way Sebastian Younger describes how insurgent war works, which is it's all about creating friction for anybody trying to spy on your shit. There's no perfect answer, but the more things you can make be a pain in the ass, the better your odds that you will not have an issue, right? Like, that's all you can do is make it potentially more annoying and more difficult for whoever might be looking, right? Like, the more friction you can create, broadly speaking, the more secure you're going to be.
Absolutely. Now, another thing to think about, and we're getting kind of deep in the weeds here. This is above and beyond the average person, right? The average person, get a password manager. Don't use your same password everywhere. And don't use biometrics unless you're forced, like pretty much have to, and move on with your life. But once you're beyond the average person, this is what we're talking about now. So like if you have a computer and you use it as your normal day-to-day operating system, talking to your friends, doing dot, 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 but then also need to do something else a little more privacy inclined, you should not trust that device. So at that point, your web browser may have all sorts of cookies and metadata and storage in it that even if you're going through a VPN, still may be able to reveal your identity, as well as MAC addresses and other stuff. So if you really want to get pretty into the weeds with this, you have to do something like use an ephemeral operating system install that has no legacy data on it. One example of that is it's a Linux-based one. It's called Tails. You essentially use it like a live USB drive. You boot off of that only, or you use a machine dedicated for this, and you burn the OS down every time you're done, because there's no legacy information or data that can be pulled out of your web browser or your cookies or your MAC address information that can associate it with you, regardless of if you've done everything right to mask your IP address of origin.
God, that's the hot girl shit. When you're doing that kind of stuff. And again, I think at this point, I think up through most of this, it's been kind of like 50-50, people being like, that's too much, and people being like, okay, yep, this is exactly what I already am or need to be doing. This is probably very few people need to be concerned about that sort of thing. But you know, it is. I know. Like, again, I worked at Bellingcat. I had a number of colleagues who were like personal enemies of the Russian state, who had to do stuff like this. And it's, you know, paranoia. I mean, and here's the thing: going above. So again, like, if you're a normal person, you probably don't need to be, you know, doing stacking a VPN, you know, getting signal and all this stuff. But also, why not? Right? Like, there's no harm in the additional security. It is a little bit frustrating. But here's one of the things I think people don't often think about enough. You're not engaging in that kind of security stuff purely because there's a threat now, but in part because you don't know what the future is going to bring. And one of the things that I would point out for that is a lot of people right now have been having for years conversations about a thing that may soon legally be murder on a federal level, you know, abortion, right? And so it is possible that overnight, an awful lot of conversations a bunch of people have had legally will suddenly be very illegal conversations. And then you may be glad that you took greater care with your personal security prior to that point.
Yeah, I mean, like, so think of I'm not a person that menstruates, but a menstruation tracking app is very useful to a lot of people who do. Yep. And those tracking apps now, that metadata in there at some point could be extremely dangerous or incriminating to someone who otherwise was doing nothing more than trying to maintain their natural health. And so that is a really dangerous concept. So at this point, I mean, within the United States, I hate to say this, those apps are probably dangerous to the individual, because that data could be easily used by a government resource to do something bad to someone who's done nothing wrong.
So I think we should move. I mean, at this point, I think we've covered the bases that you could kind of responsibly, the advice you can responsibly give someone in a podcast, and folks should it be able to.
Hey, let me throw one thing out real quick.
Okay.
So
okay.
You mentioned, like, for example, you don't necessarily have the risk vector that requires using VPN or Signal. But yeah. Let me say this: way back when, gosh, when I was doing crypto work decades ago, I was
by which you mean cryptography, and not we should specify these days.
Oh yeah, excuse me, cryptography, yeah. Encryption
yeah.
work.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to work with Phil Zimmerman of PGP, and actually PGP, pretty good privacy, which was one of the fundamental security projects way back when, was actually written for human rights violations. He wrote it because people were doing research of, like, warlords were getting their laptops taken away and then finding out who spoke to them and getting people killed. So PGP was like this human rights thing right from the beginning. And cryptography, back when I was young and naive, I always thought to myself, this is what we need. This is the future. When everyone gets proper crypto, we'll blind the government, we'll blind the corporations. We're going to have this crypto anarchist future where the government and corporations can't get us. And the reality is, most of that got usurped. And the truth is, cryptography is too hard for most people to use. And as a result, we don't. But here's what I will say. The more people that do something simple like use Signal or use a VPN just to browse the internet, not because they're doing anything nefarious, just because they're privacy, like, conscious.
Yeah, because
makes
fuck them.
It makes it normalized. And that means that the person that's using it because they need to for, like, let's say, to protect human rights, doesn't stick out like a needle in the haystack, because everybody's already doing something sane in the first place. Normalizing proper privacy and cryptography is better for everyone.
Yes, yes, absolutely agreed.
There's two kinds of people in the world: people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is a nice segue, because you were just talking about the past and how beautiful and bright it seemed. Let's talk about what you see as kind of the future of info security threats.
Well, I mean, so there's so many levels to that. First of all, if we're talking nation state level, I personally strongly believe that all of the big players have already compromised everyone's networks.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's got everybody.
There's we a got million Russia. Zero.
Russia's got us.
There, right?
China's got us. We got China. Anybody right now could go in and pretty much fuck up the grid on someone else like that.
Yeah. And there's And that's not actually the least, that's safer than other possibilities, like, because there is a level of mutually assured destruction there, where it's like, yeah, man, Russia could take down the grid, but, like, that wouldn't be good for them, and vice versa, you know?
Yeah, no, true. So the reality is, though, everybody's in everybody's network. Those mm-hmm. days are over. When it comes to the individual, and I'm going to have the audience, there might be people in the audience that feel differently, and it still doesn't mean that we don't try. So one of the things I want to say is, you're going to hear some skepticism here because I've been doing this career for a long time and I've seen things go wrong more than right. And so in that regard, this is going to sound kind of cynical, but when it comes to the idea of individual privacy, in my opinion, with the exception of when you're taking a very active effort in something very specific that you want to keep private, because that's something you're working on personally, the reality is individual privacy is dead and gone. Yeah. And we're just starting to smell that corpse. Whether it is credit card data transactions, your cell phone history, your phone numbers, what you've done on the internet, what you've done on social media or not done on social media, whether you have an account on Facebook or not, doesn't even matter. The metadata and the trail you're leaving behind you is all aggregated, all of it behind big data corporations, all of it compromised, all of it searchable. Even stuff the government has on you has been sold to large corporations, because I can tell you, that some of the data that they kept for, like, let's say DMV or MVD, they decided to sell it off to a corporation and they themselves access it through a third party when doing research on you. So all of that big data, there's a law of physics. The more you aggregate, the more it'll get compromised.
Geez.
I'm sorry. That's the truth.
No. I mean, yeah, you're like, it's this, there's this frustration, because I can remember the days when the privacy hounds, and I don't say that in a negative term, were like warning everybody about, hey, you don't want to be aggregating all of these different social media things together. Hey, you don't want to be using all of these services. Hey, there's actually some like real downsides to like all of what's happening. Like part of why things are so cheap on Amazon is, you know, that your data there is one of the assets that they have. And those people were absolutely right. And they lost harder than anyone has ever lost at anything. Like,
that's true. So like when I was back there at that company doing all that cryptography work, mm-hmm. we were trying to give crypto like to the average general population and for the internet. I had this, like I said, this naive view of like the future that was going to be this place where we're going to have the internet, where everyone was connected. And it was going to be, not only would we have personal privacy through cryptography, but we would be able to transfer information to one another in a way that would make the shenanigans impossible. Well, to some degree, that's been true. We've seen some of that. But to another degree, we also have Snowden dropping the bomb on revelations about what the government has done to the individual and how they've broken the law with all of our privacy and data. And what came of that? A man in exile in Russia and pretty much fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing. And I was sitting at a DEF CON presentation where General Alexander was on the screen talking about what they weren't doing while Snowden was dropping revelations, proving him to be lying. And nothing comes of it, right? Nothing really comes of it. And one of the things that's so real, and so whether it's the tribal level, your neighbors across the street, or the internet tribe, we as a people in the aggregate are always willing to give up our rights to something bigger for convenience. And we've done that. And it's called Facebook and Twitter. Yep. And social media, and in the process, what was going to be an amazing resource has become the trap.
It's such a, it's because you know Garrison, my friend who is much younger than me, has grown up with the internet being what it is now, right? Like this kind of like nightmare trap, you know, that's sucking us all in, this like giant squid that has us in its tentacles. And it's, I sometimes like dissociate talking with them about certain internet things, because in my heart, it's still the promised land.
Yeah. I wish I felt that way. It doesn't feel like that way to me anymore, to be honest. I mean,
it's not right. Like, I mean that in like, sort of, I have this, I don't know. I've never entirely been able to like, let go of the vision of like, oh, it could have been, there's so many things it could have been.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like all technology, anything can be weaponized, right?
Right.
And like an AR-15 can be used for good or for evil. A knife can be used to make a beautiful meal or to commit a murder. Right. And the internet is technology, and it has been weaponized. It's been weaponized against us. But at the same time, if we just turn a blind eye to it and then not learn how to use this technology to our advantage, we're allowing them to do that unabated. And that's where like the kind of hacker mindset comes from, which is like, how do I make this thing do what I want it to do for me while not letting someone else do it for them? And unless we take control of the technology for ourselves, like I said earlier, normalizing using Signal and even basic VPN and cryptography, then we're just giving it up. We're not even making it a challenge. We're just like, here you go, have it. And that's something that I think that's more important as a community, maybe as people grow up on the internet versus seeing it becoming something that I saw become something. Maybe either A, they'll just accept, which I hope isn't the case, that the reality is privacy is dead, or maybe they'll approach the internet differently than, say, someone of my age did, where frankly, we kind of messed up and we didn't realize that Primrose Path was actually a trap. And that's a, like, that was a mistake. And maybe we can kind of like evolve beyond that. But like, you were asking, where is InfoSec going now? I don't have good notes for that. Like when I first started working in the career, it really felt like a great thing. We were doing important stuff. We were doing DDoS mitigation. We were going into hospitals and making sure that insulin pumps weren't compromised as a DDoS host. Believe it or not, hospitals are InfoSec nightmares. And we were doing stuff that felt good. And then later in the career, I realized, wait a minute, I'm not doing anything to secure anybody's personal information or make the internet safer. I was just protecting some corporate coffer. And the reality was that the private information that we were supposedly protecting, the debate would turn into calls, which was, what's more expensive, losing the data or the lawsuit for losing the data? Mm-hmm. Literally, those were the conversations in corporations. And those are the conversations that corporations have now about each and every one of our personal information.
Now, when you think about, because so I obviously I'm in a different was in a different field, but when I was doing a lot of the research on terrorism that I was doing, I had these things that were like sort of the this kind of attack is going to happen at some point. I feel that very much about like drones. There's going to be like a mass killing of civilians, not in a war zone, by a civilian weaponized drone at some point in the not too distant future. It's going to happen. It's going to be done. It's absolutely an inevitability.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. When you think about kind of the digital equivalents of that, like what are you looking towards?
Well, I agree with you about the drone. Like you can see stuff.
Oh God,
yes. You plot the dots and you know what's going to occur, right?
Yes.
It's not possible to avoid. We've unleashed that out of the cage and it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, I think we're seeing it already. We're seeing the level of privacy invasion that I don't think people already know has happened. Like I know some of us realize that and we talk about it and we rant about it, but like, I don't think people realize the level of the incursion that has occurred to the point where all of this data aggregated to the point they know what toilet paper you prefer to buy. Like I'm talking like people like Facebook knowing that. Or the size of the corporate oligarchy that controls the internet, whether it's the small, like Alphabet Corp, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft's becoming a smaller player, weirdly. But when you think about those big names, they kind of like control everything and every piece of data about you and everything you move and say. That, I think what's the end of that? I don't think we're got to the end game of that, but I don't know how we roll it back. And that's the thing. So what's the prediction? My prediction is it's going to get worse. And we're going to get to the point where there isn't room to move without that surveillance tracking you. And like, so for example, you think of things like sci-fi Minority Report. You walk to the mall and there's facial ID happening everywhere you go with targeted advertising at the mall. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's coming. I guarantee you that's coming. And all of that's happening already. And that facial recognition stuff that's going on is happening currently now. We're just not that aware of it happening. The cop car is driving down the road and every license plate is being measured with the cameras being OCR'd, optical character recognition. And that's coming back and they're tracking every car they're driving by on the highway, even though there's not a GPS unit on your car. The ability to not be tracked will soon be impossible. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, allegedly, when I was younger, there were like certain stupid petty crimes I would commit just because like people will not be able to do this in the future. and I have a moral responsibility to steal the light bulbs from in front of this bar and throw them at my friends. Like, one day that will be a thing that people can't do without getting caught. And so, like, I had to, you know? There are, like, some bright spots, because I think you're absolutely right. There's no, on, like, a broader scale, there's no turning back the clock for stuff like facial recognition and how fucked up it's going to get. There are states like where I live in Oregon where, like, they have passed laws that are just like, you, public facial recognition is not a thing that is legal in this state. And I definitely support more attempts like that, because again, anything you can do to stymie them, to reduce the spread of the grid, to reduce the profitability of these things, even though it's, again, overall a doomed cause, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, I think that that's a good law, but I don't know that laws stop corporations when corporations have more power than law.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, obviously you can ban it for police to use and stuff, which does something to the extent that, you know, they follow the law. But none of this is, I don't know, like that's one of the things that makes me most depressed about the future, is the thought that, like, the space for, and this is not like a major issue, I guess, but like the space for kids to just like fuck around and do dumb shit when they're 19 is going to get so much smaller.
I mean, I would say, I mean, I think the thing is, like, as a natural human being, whether you're doing anything wrong, even if you're not doing anything wrong, the nature to feel like you have a private space that's to you or a private community space. I'm not even talking about wrong or right here. We're just talking about just that feeling that at this moment, this is my space where I'm not being watched, is a natural, healthy need of the human orgasm or organism. And interesting. But no, it's a human need. And I think we're going to find those spaces become smaller and smaller. And I think when you said, what's your prediction? I hate to say it, but I think the prediction is it will become impossible to not be tracked. Now, the bright side of that, maybe there's a bright side. Maybe at some point, when that's the reality, it could somehow also affect the people that are powerful and the people that are small. And we all realize that humans are humans. And therefore, the failings that sometimes we have as all human beings, we just kind of acknowledge it and be like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. That's just what people do. Like, maybe we just realize people are people. But the idea that there's never going to be a space to not get tracked, I don't know, to me, I find darkly disturbing.
It is disturbing. I do think, kind of to pivot off of what you were saying, the other aspect of that that is more positive is that all of this stuff, all of this surveillance shit, or at least not all, but quite a bit of it is, you know, it in a way, it's like a knife fight. There's no way that both parties don't get cut. And, you know, the ones wielding the knife might get cut less, but they're still going to get cut. And part of what that means in this situation is that the prevalence of all of these different ways to surveil and track also allows us to track that in the same way that, like, police, law enforcement watches people through their phones, but also a hell of a lot of cops are getting filmed doing fucked up shit now, right?
No, like, that's a great,
it does cut both ways,
right? Yep,
now again,
absolutely.
The balance of the cuts, I don't think, is going to be work out in our favor, but it's not going to be nothing on them either. And you're right. I think there are some things that we will learn in the future about the people in power in the world that wouldn't have been possible for us to learn in the past, or may not be possible even right now.
And that could be beneficial. And if we learn that about people in power, then they can't weaponize it as much against the people that aren't in power, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, one thing that I'm thinking a lot about the fact that a bunch of folks in the reproductive healthcare industry have pointed out that right-wingers have started using drones to follow people home from, like, Planned Parenthoods, or follow them to their cars, to, like, build databases of the people who are going to places to potentially, like, do that kind of reproductive health care that these folks don't think should exist. The other side of it, though, is that it is also possible to surveil them, and it will be possible to track the people doing that sort of thing. And it will be possible to do that in terms of, like, legal accountability. And it will be possible to do that for the people who embrace questionably legal tactics for frustrating those efforts, or illegal tactics for frustrating those efforts. They have access to the same technology. And again, it is a knife that will cut everybody. And I guess that's better than just one person getting cut in this situation.
That's the concern I have, right? I agree with that. Like I said, technology goes, it's a weapon and it's weaponized in all directions, depending on how you use it, for good or for bad. And so this is the same place I come to when it comes to the gun control argument. I mean, yeah, are there things we can do?
We did get to guns.
No, the reason I'm saying it's the same problem, right? Because if we allow only one side to have all of the control and power and understanding of the technology, then we at ourselves are at a huge deficit. We cannot defend ourselves or fight back. So when it comes to this kind of data and technology, knowing the basic fundamentals of what you can do to protect yourself, understand the reality of what the surveillance state or corporation is, and then doing your best to not make it easy for them is at least one step forward. But if we don't own this technology, if we don't own the tech, someone else will, and they will use it against us. It's as simple as that. And like, there's super simple stuff. Like, I was going to bring this up, but like, you can't see video because it's a podcast, but like, there's these cool glasses from Doctorow called Reflecticles that I'm showing you, Robert. And it looked like regular sunglasses, but when you put them on, they reflect IR light and actually mess with cameras in a way that turns your giant face into a ball of light.
That's
so you can wear these, they're called Reflecticles. You can wear them and just walk around the mall and all the cameras get blown out by your glasses. Like,
see,
doing that just because you can is kind of fun.
That's the hot shit. That's the shit I was promised that at least does exist. It's not everything I had hoped it would be in terms of its ability, but it is like that kind of stuff rules, and I will be picking up a pair of those. Well, we should probably close out. I did want to note, because I mentioned this, I got something a little wrong when I was talking about the facial recognition ban. It is an ordinance in the city of Portland itself. It's the first city that has done this, and it prohibits the use of public facial recognition technology by all private businesses in the city. So that is the scope of the ban that exists in Portland. I recommend looking it up. It is the kind of thing that I would support everyone pushing for in their city. Because again, the more holes you can make in this thing, the better.
Yeah, I don't want to put that down. That's a good thing. But the challenge of this is, just like I mentioned earlier, moving the data out of the CONUS and back. Mm-hmm. The minute photos from, like, I take my iPhone and scan the crowd and then put that picture up on the internet.
Yeah,
it's not under their jurisdiction. And all that facial recognition happens on every face in that photo. Yep.
And that is, again, we'll do another episode at some point about things that you can do to that's a whole different bag of tricks. But this has been really useful and really valuable. Carl, do you want to plug anything before we roll out here?
Not much. Just my normal thing. If you're interested in this kind of content, but with a more firearms oriented thing, you can find me at inrange.tv, but you'll also find some information security stuff there as well. I cover that intermittently when it applies to both topics. So even if you disagree, but appreciate my approach to this, come check me out. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Check out Carl, check out InRange TV, and continue to listen to podcasts, because the only thing that will save us is podcasts? Well, that doesn't seem right, but good for business.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal, or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health.
Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.